Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Tanisha Spain. Before Spotify playlists, there were mixtapes. Friends would gather and transfer songs from multiple albums or cassettes onto one tape. Recently, a top hip-hop producer taught University of Illinois students how to monetize mixtapes. Our own Reginald Hardwick talked with DJ Burn One and has more on that story.
Gucci Mane, A$AP Rocky, Recognize. These are among the most popular hip-hop artists today, and they all have one thing in common. They've worked with David Sweeten, also known as DJ Burn One, a Georgia-based DJ, songwriter, and record producer who is a guest lecturer at the University of Illinois School of Music this month. And he took a little bit of time away from teaching to join us. And welcome.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, man. So awesome being up here.
Did you grow up listening to hip-hop?
Yeah, I did. And it's like my dad listened to like classic country, and my mom listened to like 80s pop and stuff like that. But when I was like 7 years old, I remember almost like a movie. I went out, I was playing baseball, and it was like in between games or something. And I remember going to sit in my mom's car. I was like, can I just go sit in your car? And she was like, yeah, you can just go relax. And so I look on the ground right before I get in the car, and there's a Kilo Ali Get This Party Started album. Kilo Ali is a legendary Atlanta artist. You know, kind of like club music, but also like rapping about real life. You know, like honestly, like when I put that tape in, my mind was blown. I learned about racism. I learned about a lot of stuff that I wasn't aware of at the age of seven. You know, he was talking about how people were treating him because he was black and this, that, and the other. And I was like, I grew up downtown in Atlanta, and I was like, you know, a Mexican kid, you know, around mostly black people. And I didn't understand racism at the time because I didn't know anybody treated anybody differently, you know? And so hearing that, I'm like, And then you get around the world and see it. It like opened my worldview so young. And so hip hop to me has always meant something different.
People of a certain age, I'm talking about Gen Xers like myself, remember mixtapes when people literally put different songs from albums or tapes on a cassette to share. So you brought this into the digital era. How did you do that?
There was kind of a whole scene going on of people, artists releasing music and finding their own fan base just direct to market and not going through a label or something like that. And so there was a lot of mixtape DJs doing, we would take like the top exclusives, meaning songs that were unreleased from independent artists in the area. We'd find artists we like, get exclusive songs and put them on a mixtape. So it'd be like a collection of 15 to 20 songs. And we would release that and basically drive around the city, drop them off on consignment, you know, come back in a week, pick it up, you know, learn some things from the process, and then do it again. And so that kind of developed into me doing artist tapes, which, you know, I kind of saw what 50 Cent was doing in New York, and he was rapping over other people's beats, and we call that freestyle. Like, somebody else has a track, he'll download it online, rap on it, and release it on a mixtape. Burn one.
Because you're mixing different artists and different songs, I'm assuming here that record companies, I probably think that's very interesting because they spend a lot of money promoting certain artists. How does the business end of that? How do you handle that?
It's different. You know, there was like street artist mixtapes, like with Gucci Mane, and he was having an issue with his label, and this was a way for him to connect with his fans directly and keep his career going and not stall out. On the flip side of that, you have a situation like the records I did with A$AP Rocky, and they had initially planned for his album to be an album, but once they realized how much it was going to be to clear all the samples, they were kind of like, oh, we'll throw it out as a mixtape. And it's like, that's okay, but he's not a street mixtape artist. He already has like $1 million budget, and y'all just chose not to clear the samples. And so it took me 10 years to get paid for it.
What is a tough lesson that you'll be sharing with students?
Definitely just how to protect yourself. I think that A$AP Rocky lesson was a good one as far as how to protect yourself, because if I hadn't gave those stems over, then they would have been like, well, we want the stems, and I would have said, well, let's do some type of producer deck or something like that. I would have had some other type of situation there where I could have gotten some money up front as opposed to that. And having to wait 10 years for money for two beats is a mighty long time, you know, and it's like life goes on and stuff like that. But in other careers, you don't have to wait for that. It's like not even a real, you know, there's bad business in all walks of life, but it's not a common thing. It's a common thing in music. So I want to help make that less common with what we're doing in the class.
So for people who don't know, what is a stem?
So a stem is basically if you create a track. You have different instruments. So whether it be the drums may be a kick, snare, and a hi-hat, and then the song may actually have the guitar, bass, and other things like that. And so when somebody wants to purchase a beat, you can they'll say, hey, I want the stems. But right then is when you need to have some type of an agreement in place. And you need to say, well, what is the business behind this? You know, at the time, I was just trusting. And I was thinking, hey, it's a music business. It's going to be worked out, man. These are professionals. And it's like, they're professionals and you're not. You know, I wasn't knowing at the time. I was still pretty young. And so that's basically what we're trying to teach people is how to protect yourself.
DJ Burn is based in Atlanta. 30 years ago, another hip-hop act from that city, TLC, became one of the top-selling all-female musical groups of all time, with songs like Waterfalls. Despite having sold millions of records worldwide, the trio filed bankruptcy after naively signing deals that left them with little money. Here's the late rapper Lisa Left Eye Lopes speaking to VH1's Behind the Music.
This is how a group can sell 10 million records and be broke. And everyone, get ready to do your math. When we first started out, we were kind of cocky. Okay, there are 100 points on an album. TLC had 7. Every point is equal to 8 cents. All right? 7 times 8, 56 cents. But as time went on, we learned a lot. That means every time an album gets sold, TLC gets 56 cents. So 10 million records, $5.6 million. Seems like a lot of money. Well, it's not a lot of money when the record company has spent $3 million to record your album. And in the record business, we pay all costs back to the record company. We pay recording costs, video costs. So now we have $2.6 million left. Well, guess what? When you have that much money, you're in about the 47, 48, 49% tax bracket. So that immediately gets deducted to $1.3 million. Then you split the rest three ways. You got about three.
I asked DJ Burn One, in the years since TLC ran into financial woes, has the music business changed? Is it easier for artists?
I think if you're not informed, it's exactly the same. And I want to show people that you don't have to be a shark to succeed in the business or to be sustainable, because I think so many people get taken advantage of and they get an opportunity and they start taking advantage of people because they're like, well, they did this to me. And I'm not going to perpetuate that. And I want to show people there's a better way of doing it. And so I want to walk the talk of what I'm talking about. That's the main thing we're teaching is self-empowerment. Self-empowerment, how to put it all on your shoulders, because to me, I've always only wanted to succeed or fail on me. The main thing is informing yourself on the basics of contracts. You know, if you're a producer, understand the basics of a producer agreement. What is a producer advance? How does that affect how you get paid off of the back end? Because a producer advance, you're getting money in advance of the money that would be made from the album sales. So the album has to recoup, the label has to recoup all the money they've spent, including your, you know, advance of whatever, before you're getting that money back. So that's the most basic thing. But basically also like royalties, points, how does all that work? I want to teach people how to understand everything that's in a contract. That way when somebody, they place a beat and they're talking with the business person, they can themselves negotiate it before it even gets to their lawyer, just like I do. You know, I'll say, hey, I want this much for my advance. I want this much for my royalties. I want this much on the back end. I'll go down exactly what I want. And then I'll tell my lawyer, hey, I got this track coming in. They got this beat. And these are all the terms. Make sure all that's in the contract and that they didn't put anything else in there. Like, that's the way. And then when it gets done, I look at it again and make sure all that stuff is in there one more time. Because it's like you can't, at a certain point, you will be able to trust people. But until then, you need to inform yourself so you can't get taken. Because these people know more than you. And, you know, you may not even know what a work for hire is. It's a very basic term, but maybe you don't know. And I know people who have hit records who have signed a work for hire contract, and they're not getting any money from that. And to me, as a business person, I'm like, how could you have a kid sign that? But that's the business, you know? And so if that's the game we're playing, we have to teach these kids on how to protect themselves.
You're just joining us. I'm talking with DJ Burn One, who is on the University of Illinois campus, guest lecturing for a course called Music Monetization. Last year, music technology professor Lamont Holden, who you know well, hosted a segment on the 21st about hip-hop and academia. Could you have ever imagined that you'd be coming to a flagship university to teach a class like this?
Never, never. I was literally just saying earlier to the kids yesterday, I was like, my last experience in a college was me leaving college because I wasn't allowed into the music program. I wasn't accepted into it because I didn't play an instrument. I was dropping hot mixtapes already, you know? I was like, but they didn't want to hear that. They wanted an instrument. And so to come back and me have a class based off of my curriculum and to be meeting the students and see, you know, meet with the music director and everybody and see how forward-thinking everything is and how accepting they are and realizing how much they need it and how much these kids need it now. It's just a beautiful thing. It feels like it's all making a lot of sense. It really does.
What do you say to people who, despite nearly 50 years of hip-hop being part of the culture, say it doesn't belong in academia like classical music or jazz?
I think they were saying that about jazz when jazz first came out, and they were saying that about rock, and then they came out with rock classes. So it's like, you know, people are resistant to what they don't know, and they're fearful of what they don't understand. And now we kind of realize, like, hip-hop has influenced culture everywhere in a myriad of ways. You know, one of the ways is sonically. Everybody wants their drums to knock like hip-hop, you know. Another thing is just the culture. Like, they want to dance like hip-hop. They want to dress like hip-hop. You know, it's like hip-hop is the culture. And so it's like if you try to ignore it, you're not dealing with reality. And so the thing I learned talking with the music director the other day, they're really trying to be helpful here and really try to help the kids and actually do something to make an impact with them. Because today's, I think Professor Holden was saying it the other day, we know how to teach a saxophone. You know, DAWs, digital audio workstations, what kids make beats in, Ableton and Fruity Loops and stuff like that. They've been around for 20 years maybe. And so, like, there's a whole new curriculum that has to be developed behind that. And so that's what we're doing with my masterclass options. We're going to be coming out with more classes. So mine is, like, the flagship one off of that, like, kind of top to bottom on how to produce, how to make samples, how to make dope beats, how to get the beats to people, how to have great relationships, how to network, and then basically how to handle your business, how to market yourself and handle business.
The digital world is so vast. Anybody can upload their artistry to YouTube or TikTok or Spotify, and the apps go on and on. Do you think that gives young music artists of today a false sense that they can become stars overnight?
I think a lot of people do want instant gratification, and they just watch the videos, and they think that's the actual life, as opposed to how much people actually work. And so that's what I'm telling kids on campus. It's like, some of these kids are really dope. And my advice to them is, if you're willing to do the work, it may work out for you. And they're like, willing to do the work. I already got dope beats. I'm like, the other part of the work. You know, like, in our creative world, we have the actual art and then getting it out to the world. You know, like, the marketing part of it. We know all the great artists we know somehow had some great marketing behind it. And so that's what we're helping them do, too, is, like, get them, show them how they can get their message out there. You know, if they're artists, we show them how to do a rollout. If you're a producer, we tell you how to, like, produce different content, different things like that.
Who are you listening to these days?
Ooh, Krungbin. Do you know Krungbin?
Nope.
Oh, it's a super hot indie rock band from Texas. And my homie's actually the drummer in it. His name is Beans. He's from Houston. And he's actually from a production crew called Beans and Cornbread. And they did a lot of Houston stuff, like Zero and these, like, great Southern rappers. And he played in the church with this guy. And they played for a long time in church, and then the guy from church knew this girl. She played bass. They formed a trio, and they are killing it. Go listen to it, Krungbin. I like experimental stuff. I like stuff that's different. I like vibey music. And I like songs with great arrangements. You know, that's what we're really trying to get people to put back in their songs, is dynamics, arrangements, like wild cards, something that's, like, fresh and different. You know, like, I always name check, like, Britney Spears' Toxic is a great song. And they're like, what? You like Britney Spears' Toxic? I'm like, have you heard that song? Like, there's so many elements. And, like, it's such a great arrangement. And that's what I want, man. I want to help, like, inspire kids to make great music.
If you could make a mixtape of an old school hip hop artist, or go back in time and make a mixtape, what would you include?
Kilo Ali, Baby Baby. I would do Mr. Blackberry Molasses.
Blackberry Molasses, one of the things that never change. You gotta keep pushing on, the sun don't rain all the time. There's gonna be some heartache and pain.
That was DJ Burn One, a Georgia-based DJ, songwriter, and record producer who is a guest lecturer at the University of Illinois School of Music this month. Thank you for taking time to join us in the studio.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
And that's it for today. I'm Tanisha Spain, in for Brian Mackey. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media.